Cerotech is celebrating 7 years, but you get the goodies. Now through February 22nd, save 25% off all software purchases of $399 or more. Get system access licenses for two computers starting at just $299. And that includes free lifetime upgrades. Try SAMNet for 1 year and get the 13th month free. And for existing users, for any new user you refer who tries SAMNet for 1 year, you will get one free month of access to SAMNet for yourself. Whether you're ready for a better screen reading option or want a second option for maximum accessibility, there's never been a better time, and there's never been a better price. Call toll-free 866-202-0520 or visit www.cerotech.com. Welcome to Tech Chat number 5. This is Michael Loff, and we have a room of enthusiastic people, good number of folks turning out for tonight's topic, digital servants. Different pieces of technology that people use to live independently, to diminish the need for sighted assistance. Always great when we have that, a family member, friend, but for some people that's not an option, or for sometimes a pair of eyes is not convenient when we need it. So we're going to talk about the tools that we use to accomplish that. We're going to talk about everything from buying groceries online, using comparison sites, money identification, thermostats, online banking, tools like ID Mate or other barcode scanning devices, clocks, radios, thermostats, scales that tell you you're overweight and then say, have a nice day. Caller ID devices and much more, all coming up on this edition of Tech Chat. Before we get started, just a couple quick things. We've just issued a petition asking Amazon to make the new Kindle 2 fully accessible, since they've already put the Nuance voices in place. And the upcoming Tech Chat, slated for whatever 2 weeks from the 16th is, March 2nd. Cell phones. Mike Calvo and I and maybe a few others are going to talk about some different things that we're doing with cell phones, including audio and GPS and all kinds of good stuff. So that should be a very interesting podcast. And he's also going to talk about some stuff he's learned about when switching plans and providers. But anyway, with that, let's proceed. Okay, well, I think one of the first things we're going to talk about is purchasing groceries online. A few people live in areas where they do have stores that deliver, and they have accessible online portals where they can go and buy their items. Some folks do not have that luxury. Some cities have at times had different services where you call the store and tell them what you want and they bag it up and maybe this entity goes and picks it up for you. But those usually come and go. But we're going to talk about a few that we know of. Certain places of the country that are better served than others. I fortunately have a store that delivers here called Schnucks, S-C-H-N-U-C-K-S. But I just want to ask real quickly if any of you are buying groceries online, either being delivered by a local grocery store or perhaps buying some non-perishables. There's all kinds. There's a big list, and I'm going to have it in the show notes over at cerotalk.com. But Fred's Head Companion has a pretty extensive list of places where you can go online and buy. And one of my concerns was that it seems like you'd rack up quite a bit of shipping buying a lot of canned goods. I think it was Mary Ellen, I may be wrong on that, who said you also have groceries delivered via local store?
Yes, it's called Boxed Greens, and it's www.boxedgreens.com. They are in Tempe, Arizona. They are a member of the co-op, which they sell certified organic meats, produce, a few dry groceries, and I've been dealing with them for probably 4 or 5 years. They are wonderful, wonderful people, and all I need to do is go up and pick out what I want, and I braille it, and call them and place my order, and they're very good. If they run out of something, they will call me and say, we don't have, let me give you an example. Today, I had ordered some rotelli pasta, and they called me this morning, and they said, we're out of rotelli. How about we have some really wonderful, you know, spaghetti? And so I said, well, that'll be fine. So they're very good that way. And I have had the pleasure of meeting the owners, and they know me, and they're quite good.
Yeah, you mentioned Schnucks. I don't do it all the time, but if I need groceries and none of my friends are really going at the time, I will do it. The site works great. I've used it with both Windows screen readers and the Mac on Safari. Works great.
I know a few of you mentioned you use Schwann, so go ahead and state your first name, and then we'll talk to you about kind of what things you buy from them and how often you get deliveries and so forth. So again, just state your first name. We'll call you in turn.
Big Wally.
What do you buy from Schwann's, and how often do they deliver to you, and kind of talk about your experience with them?
Siobhan comes here to Grand Rapids, Michigan, every 2 weeks. I've ordered by phone, and I order quite a lot of different things from them. Mostly, though, just small things, like maybe I'll order a pint of ice cream or some of their heart-healthy products because I'm in a situation where I need to watch some things. I find them very convenient because of the fact that I don't have to try to get to the store and that sort of thing. But I do have a lot of trouble trying to navigate their online site. But I have a lot of trouble navigating a lot of things because I'm a little new.
Anyone else buying from Schwann's?
Connie Grace.
Okay, go ahead, Connie.
I am buying from Schwann's some. I just bought some good, healthy salmon filet patties that don't have to be cooked a couple of weeks ago. They do come here in my apartment building every 2 weeks as well. But the problem I have with a lot of their stuff is I don't even put stuff in the oven that has to be cooked, and the stuff that don't have to be cooked is very salty. So I don't get a lot of stuff for them from that reason anymore.
Well, do any of you find some of their stuff to be a little overpriced? And I certainly understand they're moving refrigerated trucks, so they probably do have a little more overhead costs, quite possibly. What are some of your Schwann's favorites?
Seems like we end up getting a lot of ice cream and breakfast items from them. They have now they have stuffed French toast. That's pretty good. Cinnamon rolls, omelets, things like that that we want quick, but it's different than cereal.
Checkbook programs and tools that people are using to write checks. Now, Jennifer, I understand you're using one on a pretty regular basis. Why don't you talk about which application you're using for writing checks?
I use Money Talks. It's a program that the printing house made. I've been using it for 2 or 3 years now. I like it because it is a self-voicing application. So even if you didn't have speech on your computer but you needed it for that application, you would have it. And it also will let you use a regular wallet size check, and it was pretty easy to set it up. I used a little sighted help just to get the check calibrated the first time so that it would line up right in the printer, but after that, you're on your own with it.
And how do you sync that with your bank? That's one of the things I'm curious about.
You can either go through your online transactions and enter them yourself, but if you do that, and you want to sync it with your bank, you have to be sure that you write the memo field or the payee field the same as what your bank has. But you can also tell it which field you want it to reconcile with. And there is a file. Some banks will let you use something similar for QuickBooks or the older version that you can download from your bank, and then you just import that file into the check program.
Okay, that sounds really awesome. That's what, over at APH.org, right? American Printing House? Well, we'll provide a link to that so that anyone interested in that. Because I don't think it's that much, is it? Was it $39, $49? Which for the independence it offers, I think is pretty handy. Isn't that about what it was? Chris, you said it's been a few years since you bought it, right?
It's been a couple years, but I think it was about $39. But it was money well spent. I was a little skeptical at first because I'd always used QuickBooks, and it's so much more complicated with speech, and you have to remember what field you've tabbed into because it won't always say the field you're in, and I always used it for invoicing, but this is so much easier just for your personal accounts. The only thing you can't do with it that I wish they would add to it is fill out a deposit slip.
Yeah, that would be handy. And like my checks, I have the carbon copies, but that's not going to do you any good there. So, yeah, you got me interested, and I may have my son help me because that was my concern, to make sure that when I put that check through the printer that it is lined up correctly. Of course, I do have a device to read it, but it might be good the first time or two to make sure that all that's in sync. Is anyone else using that or any other software for creating checks? I know it can be done online as well. And so if anyone is doing anything like that, using either an online service or a standalone piece of software for creating checks.
Mary Ellen Earls, I use the other checkbook. It's checkbook talking checkbook, and I have absolutely drawing a blank as to who produces it, and I've been using it for just basic check writing, and I write so few checks now that, you know, it doesn't get used too much, but it's a self-voicing.
Are any of you, like, totally doing all your bills online, as I pretty much am? The only thing I can't is actually my monthly rent. They still want a check. I'll start with you, Scott, in Australia.
Yeah, basically, I use the couple of ways online of paying the phone bill, other type of bills through the bank over here that I use is called Commonwealth Bank of Australia, and their website, they've actually worked with some of the national blindness organisations here in Australia to make the site more accessible, very, very accessible site. And the thing I like with their website, which is really cool, is to actually log in, you have to actually use your, they send you a code to your cell phone, and you actually have to type in the 6-digit code that they send you to your phone. It's an optional step. It makes it more secure. Very, very cool. I don't know if any other organizations have that facility, but I know PayPal and the online bank have it, and it's very, very cool. And yeah, I pay all the bills online through the site, and I can also access phone banking with, talking menus that are all humanly read. Very, very cool. Works well. And I really wouldn't, I would be lost without my online banking.
I believe it was Mike. I'm not sure. Was it Mike in St. Louis who also wanted to comment on this?
Yeah, that's me. I would also be lost without my online banking as well. My bank here, it's a regional bank. It's Commerce is the name of the bank. And it's not a nationwide one, but they cover like 3 or 4 states. And they actually, on their site, it's very accessible, works very well, again, with Windows and on the Mac. And they even have some hints for using the site with screen readers. So they're definitely on a roll when it comes to accessibility. And the way they will do it here is if they can send it directly, like a utility company, they will do that. But if they can't, then they will just issue a check for you. And that's how I use that to pay, my rent and the utilities and that type of thing. And then to handle the cell phone and the cable bill, you can pay that over the phone. So I actually never have a need to even write checks. And that's a good thing. I use my online banking, and then for everything else, I use my check card, and then there are some very few places still where you still have to use cash and that type of thing. So, oh yeah, no doubt about it. Online banking is one of my best friends. I'd be lost without it.
This is Tom Scheel. The bank that I am associated with is very helpful because they send out statements in Braille. So that's a big plus in terms of keeping track of my money or lack thereof.
I don't use online banking because I don't write very many checks, but everything except my rent almost goes directly through the banking account, you know, and they automatically take it out for me. Even my church does it that way now, so I don't even have to be concerned practically about anything except my monthly Discover card bill and my rent.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to ask. I'm a little paranoid to allow someone to do automatic debiting, but I'm curious how many others of you do that as well, that things that are regular on a monthly basis to go ahead and have it auto-debited.
Scott in Sydney.
Mary Ellen Earls.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, with my internet ADSL bill, I actually do auto-debit because of the fact that they email you a PDF invoice every month to tell you that they're taking this amount out. And I've been doing it for 6 years, never had any problems with auto-debit. There are other organizations that I wouldn't do auto-debit with, such as the phone company and things like that. But for the internet bill, I find that the company is very cool, and if there are any issues, they're very quick to fix them. So definitely I recommend it. If you feel that auto-debit's the way to go, you never forget to pay your bill that way. It's very cool.
Okay, yeah, I think that's the key. There are certain, like, phone or utility companies, anything where the amount might vary and hit you with an unexpected surprise would certainly be something to think twice about. But go ahead, Mary Ellen.
Well, I started it with my Blue Cross because I just am so paranoid about, insurance bills not being able to be, you know, missing insurance bills and things like that. That's why I set it up that way.
Connie Grace again.
Go ahead, Connie.
In answer to your paranoid question, so to speak, I tell my sister, because she won't do it either, like I tell her, what's the difference in them having your checking account from your check? I mean, they got it anyway, so there's no difference. They're going to get the account number regardless of which way you do it. And I also use the phone bill because, well, for one thing, I got unlimited long distance now, so my phone bill practically stays the same every month anyway. But even if it doesn't, you know what your long-distance calls are, and if you keep a record of them, and you do get your bank statement, I mean, you do get your statements from the utilities to match what the bank statement says.
Well, I guess in part because I worked for the Better Business Bureau and saw people have problems. Granted, they are the minority, but also I saw where, and I think it's better now, but initially there were a lot of problems because banks would write checks for people but not put anything in the comment field as to what the check was for. And then 2 or 3 months later, these companies would come back and tell consumers they hadn't paid their bills. And so I hope anyone doing it is keeping all of your receipts and your documentation of proof, all those confirmation emails and so forth, in a safe place so that 3-6 months down the road, if someone comes back and disputes. I've even had a problem with the Schnucks grocery store coming back, not once, but twice, telling me that I didn't pay when I had. We need to be mindful of that.
Dave McElroy and I have been doing online banking for, my God, 20 years or more.
I know there's many users and people who listen to our podcast that are afraid of it for some reason. And I think, I know Wally mentioned earlier, sometimes it's people who are new users to the internet, and I would agree. If you're new to the internet, online transactions may not be the first thing that you want to do. But by the same token, there are some things you can do to kind of get yourself acquainted with it. You know, learning things like making sure you're on a secured server before you give that credit card with the HTTPS or the closed padlock, if you can see that. And starting with companies that you know and trust that are larger, you know, not just going with some company you never heard of. You know, one that you know obviously is going to have ramifications, you know, if they're doing things wrong, whether that be your phone company or utility or something that you trust doing your first transaction. And again, if you're not comfortable, you know, at first you can do something like Amazon.com or something that literally does millions of transactions. So start with a name company. I want to talk about product identification. We did mention it last week, and I reviewed, and someone asked me the name, and I had a brain freeze, the Metrologic barcode reader, and that's an interesting device. But a lot of people have the ID mates, and I know Jennifer and I think Mary Ellen, they both have them. And Mary Ellen, you were saying you actually take it to the store, right? So you can actually review the products right there. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mary Ellen, and from Arizona, yes. A friend of mine happened to be here when I got my upgrade, and she said, "Oh, I want to see that." And so I had a can of soup there and showed her what it did. So we took it to the store, and we were walking around just looking at different products. And finally, the manager came up and said, "Could you please tell me what you're doing?"
Yeah, I could see that. And, you know, a lot of people doing the same thing actually with their cell phones, where they can actually scan the barcode and it'll go out and tell them if there's a better price, and actually using it for price comparison. But the ID Mate doesn't do that. It just tells you what it is, right? And tells you the size, the quantity of the product. So you don't see like the price or anything, but it is telling you what the items are. 2 million, is that strictly food items, or does it cover other things as well, Mary Ellen?
Well, I use it basically for food things, but it's amazing the food things that are in there, like Amy's Pizza. I'd never even heard of Amy's Pizza until, you know, we were at this a local grocery store, and my friend handed me this box, and it was sitting there reading me the whole label information and the heating instructions. But I've used it because I had 2 bottles on the shelf above my washer, and I needed to know which was the Shout and which was whether it was Windex or just what, but because the bottles looked alike. So, you know, it told me what the Shout was. That's all I can think of right now.
Okay, Jennifer, if you're still in here, if you talk about your use of the ID Mate and how it has improved your life.
I like it for a lot of times the cooking instructions on things. You know, sometimes you have an idea, but it's nice to be able to cook things that the way they're really supposed to be cooked and have it turned out right. And I use it lots of times for identifying products. And the cool thing about it is if you know what something is that it doesn't have, or you can get someone to tell you what something is that it doesn't have in its database, you can add it to the memory of the ID mate, and the next time it sees that same barcode, it'll give you that same information.
And I know, because people will ask, why don't you tell us where you can buy this product and then about how much it costs?
Envision America is where we purchased ours, and it was about $1,300, but that was at the convention, at an NFB convention, so I don't know if it's always that price or not.
They've just come out with a new one, too. They've just come out with their IDmate Omni, I think it's Omni 3. And they're Envision America. They're based out of Normal, Illinois. I don't have, I believe the URL is envisionamerica.com.
Did I hear a talking caller ID in the background?
You sure did. It's the phone.
That was my segue into our next discussion about people that have different talking caller IDs. Which device do you have?
The Clasco, I think it's 99C. It's the one that speaks the call waiting, although it doesn't do it very well.
Sounds like from my conversations, a lot of people are either using the devices from Clasco, and I'll put a link to their website for people who want to pursue that, but also the Panasonic phones. I'm trying to remember what mine, I want to say is KXTG5651, but there was a whole series of phones that are Panasonic phones that have the talking caller ID built into them.
Scott, excuse me.
Mike in St. Louis.
Okay, we'll start with Scott.
Yeah, I've got one of the caller ID boxes from, I think it was Jackson Industries, and it's that small square device that speaks in English or Spanish, and not as good as the Clasco devices, but from what I've been told, the Clasco one's definitely better, and I do like it. It doesn't work with the call waiting over here, which is a bit of an unfortunate issue, but for what I need it for, it actually does read the number of the person who's calling. It can't read the names, but I've got one of the Panasonic phones that Mike and Pam have, and as long as you program a voice tag of your own and the phone number into the phone, it reads it out. But that's one of the older Panasonics, but the newer ones I hear can actually just read the number if you don't have a voice tag programmed in.
Okay, Mike.
I no longer have a landline, but when I did, and I still got a couple of them around here, actually, they're great. The Clasco boxes, the 9900 CW, it's a, and it will say the number when someone calls, and it will also speak the call waiting. It'll speak the call waiting, number as well. And you can record a voice tag also for certain people, and then it will play that instead of speaking the number. I've kind of gone cellular exclusively, or I use, well, cell phone or Skype. And on Skype, of course, it'll tell you, call from whoever it is when you answer that. Now, on a cell phone, with any of the screen readers and any of the cell phones, they will tell you the number of the caller ID if it's available, or if you have it in your contacts, then the phone itself will display the name, and the then it will read that instead. And it you can also get the number or name of a call waiting call too on a cell phone. So that's a good thing. But yeah, those Clascos are they're excellent. I would recommend them to anybody.
Yeah, just don't buy the all-in-one phone pieces. I bought one of those and it was a piece of junk. I heard someone, I'm sorry, was it Connie by chance?
Yes, it doesn't have anything to do with the voice part, because I have the Panasonic too, and I have a caller ID that I'm not even using. But I just wanted to say another thing about the Panasonic for people that don't know them, and maybe some other new technology nowadays too. They will go a long ways. I'm in a big four-wing apartment building, and it goes in all except two wings. I can be just about anywhere in this building and take that phone with me and get my phone numbers very well.
Mike?
Yes, is that Tom?
I use two caller ID pieces. I have an old Astra caller ID. It's a 99 number, and I use that because it's the only way that I can get the call waiting caller ID information. The Panasonic phones typically do not do the call waiting caller ID information very well. The Panasonic phone that is common and very easy to use because it has actual review of the caller ID information is the KXTG 2335. The newer ones like the 5650, they do not have the ability to review, but the KXTG 2335 does have the ability for you to review your phone calls after you've received them.
And you yourself can access that and go back through the call history and hear those calls?
Yes. Yeah, I can actually just hit the down arrow key, and it reviews the last 20 calls.
Money, 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 money. I want to start with Scott on this one because I want to eventually ask if any of you have devices for speaking the status of your money, ones, fives, tens, twenties, and so forth. But Scott is a little different situation in Australia because the size of the bills are different based on their denomination. So, Scott, talk about how you identify and keep track of your money.
Yeah, with the money here in Australia, it's made out of a material called polymer, which is like a plastic slippery type material. Basically, the way that you tell the notes apart is the length of the notes. And I've also got a little device. It doesn't speak. It's like a plastic device. It looks a bit like a sandwich folded in half. You fold your note back over itself, and there's lines on the device to indicate whether it's a $5, $10, $20, $50, or $100 note. And you just fold the note down, and whichever line it comes up with, it is what the note will be. And there's also braille symbols to indicate the denomination of the note there. Like, there's no braille on the notes at all. This is just like a little window. And I think it's there for watermark purposes. But, yeah, they're good notes. They kind of get a bit slippery if you have a heap together, and they kind of can slip out of your hand and stuff. I actually prefer the polymer notes to the old paper notes that we did have in the early 80s and that sort of thing.
I wonder if those are easier or harder to counterfeit. Do you have a lot of problems in Australia with counterfeit money?
You can't actually counterfeit these polymer notes because they've got a few different... they've got some watermarks. They've got a couple of lines in the paper or in the plastic that you can't really forge. And they've got these little window-type things in the corner. And I don't know if they're anything... Like, if you look through the window, if it's like a visual representation of the note or something. But, yeah, definitely very difficult. Can't be counterfeited. I think there have been a few attempts of it, but you can pretty much pick them up quite easily. I think the writing is so small that the newer copiers can't even copy the writing like on the US currency.
Well, very interesting. That's certainly one way to approach it by having different sizes for your denominations. Do any of you have devices for identifying money that will actually speak it? K1000 and maybe Open Book, I'm not sure. I haven't used that in a while. I think maybe it worked with HP scanners or something, but certainly many people have scanning software, OCR software, can do it that way, although there have been instances where it could be wrong, but correct much more than not. And of course, at least the U.S. currency has changed a few times over the last few years, but so that's one way to do it. Some people.
I've had a couple of the note teller.
Okay, well, back off the mic just a little bit there, Pam, so we don't pop the P so bad. But yeah, go ahead and tell us about how your note teller device and how that works.
It's about the size of a pack of cigarettes, and it has a switch for moving the volume control. You put the money in. It takes a 9-volt battery, and you put a bill in. Now, they've changed currencies since I've gotten them, so I have the second one, and I don't know what's going on with the newest denominations over the past year or so. If your bill is nice and straight, and if your corners are nice and straight, and if the bill is not washed out, you'll then get a read on whether it's a 1 or a 5 or a 20 or a $100 bill. And I believe it's from the Britech Corporation out of Canada, and I believe the gentleman, I'm told at least by some friends who beta tested the original, that it is a voice, it's the voice of a Canadian radio personality who does it very clear, and it's a good unit. The problem comes if you have bills folded in odd ways and they get crimpled, or if they're limp and or the corners are crimped, because it has to see a corner. But if you, a little time, sometimes you're going to get a bill read right away. But most often you have to dink around a little bit and turn it over, at least by my experience.
Okay, well, that's an interesting point because a lot of blind people fold their bills and double fold and quad fold and roll and do these different things that help us keep them separated, but that may affect us in the future in trying to have them reread. The basic questions are, where do you get this device and how much does this note teller cost?
It was around $400 and then it went down to $300. And I think it is Brytech, BRYTECH.com.
Okay, very good. Anyone else using any tools for identifying their money?
Hi, my name is Larry Lumpkin, and I'm in Austin, Texas. I use Kurzweil 1000 to do it when I need to, and it's a little, sometimes it's kind of hit and miss. As I said, the changing characteristics of the money seem to be, they can't seem to keep up. About the time they get it to work, then the Treasury Department changes it. I have a device called the Psi Recognizer. It's a rather expensive digital camera-based OCR system. It will work with a scanner as well, but it also has a digital camera. And it's supposed to – I've been helping the gentleman. It's made by a company called iTex, and they're out of Rome, Italy. And the CEO and I have gotten to be fairly good friends, and I've been working with him. He's going to implement U.S. currency identification in a fairly soon future release of his product. He sells it in several different configurations, and it's way above the $400 or $500. It runs from $1,000 U.S. up to, if you get the most portable solution, runs on a ultra mobile PC, and it runs like $4,500. We bought it because it'll shoot around the circumference of cylindrical objects and read the labels on cans and jars and bottles.
I thought it was said that you could read some digital displays, but I never saw a demo. Supposedly you'd have to try like 12 or a number of different configurations before you got it right. Have you done anything like that? Try to read an actual digital, an LED or LCD type readout. Have you gone there?
I didn't, but Marco was in Austin last fall. And we went to a friend of ours and had an evening dinner, and he gave the fellow a training session, and he ended up buying it. And one of his questions was, would it shoot the television screen like he was listening to the classical channel on the cable? Could he shoot it and have it tell it that it was Bach, you know, Brandenburg Concerto? And Marco said it could be done, but it might be rather difficult for a totally blind person to do. So you just it's a very simple interface. The main screen has buttons. It has you can tap a button that says book, one that says display. There's a button on the interface that says display, and you can time the camera shoot for like a delay of 3 or 5, 6 seconds, however many you want. And he set that, and he backed off from the TV while the thing was playing, and shot it, and it read it. I was amazed. It wasn't perfect, but it read all about the composer and his affairs, and we got a lot of information. We didn't get the name of the piece because I think it's because, you know, that scrolls. He's got an attachment apparently that will capture the image from a computer display, you know, direct from the video card. It hooks directly to your video port. And if you want to be, he's touting the device. If you want to be a technician, you can get what's the text is on the blue screen of death.
Do any of you have talking scales? Jennifer's, I think I stepped on it by accident once, and it told me I weighed 10 pounds more than I thought I did. And as I was trying to process that, it said, have a nice day. So I was like, yeah. So talk about your scale there, Jennifer.
It was a reasonably priced once we got it from Maxianes, I believe. And I like it because it has a woman's voice, which makes it a little easier to understand. And it's a real wide scale, and it has little like traction things on the top of it so that you won't slide off of it. And it's pretty accurate. I've weighed myself and gone to the doctor, and it's within, tenths of a pound, usually.
Talking thermostats, do any of you have any of those? The VIP or I think there's some other ones out there as well. Is anyone using that?
Yes. This is Susan, by the way. And I'm very pleased with ours. We've just had ours for, we've had ours for about a month, and I'm very pleased with it. Even tells you when your filter needs changed in your furnace. And it's awesome. The only thing is you've got to really be careful about changing the batteries in it. Otherwise, your furnace will not come on.
Okay, so talk about it a little bit. How much it costs and what kind of batteries it takes and, you know, what the speech is like or what, you know, how you program it and, you know, just did you wire it yourself or have someone else do that? Or so just talk about it a little bit.
Actually, the technicians that put the furnace in wired it because it was part of the contract, although my husband could have done it himself. The user's guide that comes with it for sighted people to read is much more comprehensive, of course, than is the CD that you get with it. But it runs on, I believe, 3 or 4 AAA batteries. And they're very easy to replace. It's very easy to program. It explains in the CD that you get with it. It's just one MP3 file in a computerized voice that you get on the CD that it describes where each and every button is. Now, I'll be honest with you. I can't remember each and every button now. I'd have to... I put the file on my Victor reader stream, and I need to go over it when I need to change the programming. But you can program it for weekends when you're in the house. You can program it for days if you go away and want to change, you know, have the thermostat turned down and have it turn itself up, like say an hour before you come home, so the house is nice and warm, and turn down at night when you go to bed. And it has a service button that you can push to know what service or what service it does not, you don't need, or if you're having trouble with it, to call MaxiAid's number. It's very easy to operate. The buttons are, except for one that is purposely inset, and you're supposed to use a stylus or a pen or something to reset. I can do it with my finger, but most people might have trouble with it. But it's very easy, and we like it. Now, we haven't programmed it. We just use it like a normal thermostat. We don't see any reason to program it.
Is this the VIP or is it some other model? And should our users know the make and model and how much you paid for it?
It is the VIP. I believe it's the $7,047.
You can actually save quite a bit of money from everything that I've seen by programming it to turn down a little bit at night or while you're away during the day at work. You can actually save 30% or more on your utility bills. And as expensive as things are now, that could more than pay for the thermostat very quickly in its first year. What technologies are any of you using for monitoring your diabetes, blood sugar levels?
My husband uses the Prodigy.
Talking radios. And all of us have talking clocks and probably talk online. Hey, I got this one, I got that one. But do any of you have talking radios to either read you the frequencies or things of that sort so you kind of know what channel or what frequency you're on? Anyone have any interesting talking radios?
Okay, Dave here in New Zealand. What I have is the Cobalt talking clock radio. Cobalt is, of course, a company in the United Kingdom. The talking clock radio is very useful.
So this is a clock radio you can program or you can change the channel on it. There is a review, I believe, at blindcooltech.com. Now on the clocks, any of you have the Moshi or any of those now that are voice activated?
I've got the talking atomic clock. It's Mike in St. Louis. And that one, you put the batteries in, it takes 2 AA's, and it's got a nice British female voice, and she actually says the time, like, instead of just a digit, she's like, the time is now 7:15 p.m. And it has an alarm and an announce, and it also tells the date, and it's an atomic clock, so you pretty much set the time zone and all that stuff, and then it will it will pretty much take care of itself from then on out as far as setting itself. And I believe they have one out now with the same voice that will also give you the temperature as well. There's a thermometer on it also.
But right, so for those who don't know, the atomic clocks are something that sets itself based on some kind of radio frequency transmission. Is that correct? Is that something to do with WWV? It's a shortwave frequency, like 3 in the morning, so you have to make sure that the device is somewhere where it can pick up that signal. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is from WWV, and for those of you that don't know, that's the one, if you're listening on shortwave, you know, at the toll, 2 hours, 3 minutes, coordinated universal time. That's WWV, but it doesn't actually pick up the audio. There's a very low frequency signal. I think it's even lower than the AM band where it transmits the current time. And that's what it uses. There's no antenna on it, but it doesn't really tell you per se whether it's picking it up or not. But it's never been out of sync from what I can tell. And it uses a very low frequency. I don't know if it's a digital broadcaster. It's some kind of data stream, though, that it uses to set itself. So it doesn't use the in addition to broadcasting the audio, basically, of the time on WWV, they do broadcast a data stream of the time, and that's what it uses.
I have a cat clock.
A cat clock. And so what does it do? Does it mew? Does it purr? Does it hiss? What does it do? Or can you program it? It maybe hisses at you when you oversleep and you hit the snooze button too many times? Or what does it do?
No, all it does is it has 12 sounds. Some of the cats purr. Some, they have a couple of sounds where the cat is drinking or eating from the food dish. And different cats mewing and... they're different breeds of cats.
Let's talk about housekeeping. Any of you have any technologies for that purpose? I believe, Mike, you mentioned to me before you own one of those Roombas.
You pretty much set it in the middle of the floor. There is a button for spot cleaning, where it will clean just a small area, and then there's a button that basically tells it, keep cleaning until the battery is gone. But then there's the button that's the regular just clean cycle, and what it will do is... it will kind of figure out how big the place is and try to go over it twice if it's able to, if the battery allows it, which it usually does. At least for my apartment, it does. And I got all hardwood floors too, so and it will basically start to spiral in a circle. And as it does, the circle will get bigger and bigger until it eventually hits a wall. And then from there, it will go crisscross the room basically, and it will clean. And the good thing about it is it's not, most people when they think of robots, they think of, you know, okay, it stands up, you know, it's got arms and, you know, a head like a person. No, this thing is actually flat. The best way I could describe it, it's almost like a scale, actually. It's flat, so it's actually able to get places that most vacuums can't go. Mine actually goes under my bed and even goes under my couch all the way to the wall and back out. And if it senses that it's stuck in a place, like mine sometimes gets under the refrigerator and has a little trouble getting itself out, but it's pretty smart. It will kind of twist and turn and jiggle itself until it gets itself free. And then when it's done, if it's able to see the home base in range, it will literally go back to its base and dock itself. And you can also set it to clean at a certain time. If you want it to clean at a certain time of day for whatever reason, you can set it for that, and it will literally climb off of its charger, go take care of business, clean the place, and go back and redock itself again to recharge itself. And pretty much all you have to do for the maintenance is you have to empty the bin, and that's how I know the thing works, because I know on mine, there's plenty of stuff in there when it's done, so it definitely works. And then... you sometimes have to take out the brushes. Now, if you have cats or if you have pets, you'll have to do this more often. You have to clean out the brushes. I don't have any pets, so that's not as much of an issue for me. But they also have now Scuba, which is a floor scrubbing robot. Basically, it will you put the solution into the holding tank. It will go scrub the floor, put down the solution, scrub it, go back, clean it up, and you pretty much empty the recovery tank when it's done. And I understand too they have a pool cleaning robot now too. It'll clean your pools. If you want to know more about that, go to iRobot. It's irobot.com. And like I said, I understand the newest ones do have speech on them, so they will actually talk. But I'll tell you what, I love mine, and for somebody, especially if you can't really see to vacuum and you're afraid you'll miss something, I'd strongly recommend getting one of these because they do work. It's not just a gimmick.
Now, what about things like wires? Maybe you have a nice stereo system or a computer system with a lot of wires in a small area. Is there some kind of gate or something you can use to make it ignore certain areas of the home or apartment?
Yep. There are two ways, actually, to keep it out of an area. One way is, if it's just a room that you don't want it to go, just close the door. That's the simple way. They also make what are called virtual wall units, and what these are basically little devices, just a little rectangular thing, and they basically put out an infrared signal, and when the robot actually senses that signal, it will not, continue that direction. So it's basically it's a signal that tells it, not to go in that area. But so I don't let it go in the second bedroom because there are a lot of wires there that it may have trouble on. But other than that, I mean, it goes around this apartment here without problems. It goes through the living room, the dining area, the kitchen, and one of my bedrooms. And it takes it about 40-45 minutes to do two sweeps. And it does have a dirt sensor, too, the newest ones do. And if it does sense that an area does have a lot of stuff, it will actually stop and spend a little more time on it. So it's pretty smart.
I understand there's a way to make it clean just a defined area. So say if you spilt some sugar or salt or, like you said, just dirt, whatever, that you could just tell it just clean this limited area and it wouldn't try to go and clean the whole apartment, right? How do you do that?
And there's two ways. There is a button on it that says spot clean, and what that will do, it'll just clean like an 8 or 9 foot area, basically. It won't go past that. The other way is it does have a remote, and if you want to actually move it around, like, forward, backward, right, left, you can do that with the remote, but usually the spot clean button will suffice, and it will, it'll just clean that, that one area. Like you say, if you spilled, it's just sugar, that would be perfect for that.
I just got a set of intercoms installed only because I can't get to the door all the time. If people don't know that I'm a little slower getting to the door, and it may be someone that, I really do need to see, or if it's somebody who is offering to shovel my sidewalk.
Mike did a snippet on the Tassimo coffee maker, and we found something similar out there made by Keurig. And instead of the discs, it uses little cups, like about the size of a good-sized communion cup. Coffee's pre-made, pre-measured, so forth. And it's very similar to the coffee maker that Mr. Calvo has.
Talk about this device. So is it just the coffee that's there? It has the water and everything, and it just heats it? Or explain this device a little bit, Tom.
The Keurig coffee maker, it has a reservoir that you fill with water, and it preheats it. And typical brewing time for a cup of coffee is about 45 seconds. And it basically, what it will do to keep the mess down is not only will it, just drain the water, but it will suck out any moisture out of the coffee pod, they call them. So when you take it out, it's completely dry, and it compresses the coffee grounds and gets the most flavor out of them.
Now, does this just make the 6.7 ounce cups like the Tassimo, or can you make larger amounts with this device?
I like this particular device, and we chose it over the Tassimo because of one reason. Number one, or two reasons. Number one, you can vary the size of the cup. You can do up to even an 18 ounce cup if you want to do that. The second reason why I chose it over the Tassimo is because it has a little accessory that you can buy for about $15 or so, and it's called the K-Cup. And the K-Cup, what it does is allows you to get your own brand of coffee. If you have a particular coffee like Gevalia or Starbucks that you really like and you want to use it, you can pre-measure the coffee from whatever brand you decide into the K-Cup and use that in place of the coffee pods.
Well, I'm definitely intrigued. Talk about the cost of the device and how much these pre-measured coffee cups that you plug into it or fit into it, what have you, how much they cost.
They run in price anywhere from $139 to $169. We got there's basically three levels, and they have another one by Breville that it's all stainless steel, and it's like in the $300 range. But Breville and Keurig are basically the same two companies. But like I said, anywhere from 139 to 169, depending on where you get it. And they have two different sizes that you can get. We got the largest size available of the Keurig brand, not the Breville. The coffee pods, they are readily available at Sears, has them. Bed Bath & Beyond has them as well. And you pay about $10 to $12 for about a package of 20. And they have different varieties of coffee. Your Bold, Gloria Jean's, Barney's, different brands, everything but Starbucks. They've got about everything else out there. They also have cocoa mixes pre-made and tea mixes pre-made.
So, again, about 50 cents a piece, but you can get those up to 18 ounce, or then you're paying a little more because those are a little larger.
Yeah, typically what you do if you want to do an 18 ouncer, you go through two pods or just get a stronger blend of coffee and then add more water to it, either way.
No one with any talking microwaves? Now, what was the one that was all the rage here for a while? I can't remember now what it was. It was pulled, and then it came back to Target. And I think even Walmart has them now. They're about $69 or something. It was talking. We actually had one at a workplace, but it only lasted about 3 or 4 months.
Was that the Hamilton Beach?
Yes, Hamilton Beach.
Yeah, I know someone that had one, and it didn't last very long.
I think I read that somewhere, that a number of people had very short live devices there. So I don't know. They've brought them back, and hopefully they've resolved those issues. Or you could do like me and just take some old Dymo tape and cut it out and label your 0 through 9 and on-off. And the power, the button that controls, like, the intensity, I guess, of the device, and off you go.
Yeah, that's what we did. We just marked the buttons we need. And, I mean, we rarely, if ever, use the defrost and the fancy stuff, except for popcorn. And we're off.
My microwave was my grandmother's, and it still works. It's about, I don't know how old this
rotary
is.
Dial?
It's probably about, it's just got the dial for the time, and it's got a power setting, you know, high or low, but by golly, it still works, so I replace it.
We bought one of those from Costco. We got a $49 a small Sanyo, and we've been using it for about 3-4 years, and that's what we did. We labeled all the buttons, and yes, we do use the defrost, but it's worked real well.
Is there a place you can still buy commercially a rotary dial microwave?
I think they're gone now. I could be wrong, but I seemed like I held on to them until they just quit making them. I don't believe they're made anymore.
I don't think
Mike, there is one that Maytag makes, and it has rotary dials. We've been looking, and it's nice thing about the rotary dials. They have a little detent click to them, so you can kind of sort of tell where you're at.
I like the digital ones, but for years, I've always had to use them because my mom, when I was a teenager, when she first got her first microwave, they had them, and I had to learn to use it, and they would label it. And I don't know, I guess I'm just used to that. But my microwave I have now, surprisingly enough, it's one of those kind of microwaves that it has the fan for the stove and everything on it, but it's above the stove, and it like the exhaust fan's on it, and the buttons, you can feel the buttons on it. I mean, they're not labeled, but you can memorize them like a keypad, and you can, like, feel them, and you hardly ever see that. The ones my mom bought, we always had to put tape on them, but this one, I don't have to put tape on it because I can feel all the buttons. It's really cool.
Well, you brought up stoves. That's a good point. Has anyone had to encounter that where you had to make modifications to use a stove? I had one place I lived. The stove had burners with controls, but the oven was just annoying. It had buttons, and you would move up in 25-degree increments or 10-degree increments and 6-minute increments, and it was just very convoluted even for a sighted person to use. Have any of you had stove trauma?
Trying to buy one, I did, because a lot of them are like that now, but I did find one that wasn't, but a lot of them are like that.
There are the new induction ranges that operate the magnetic heat, and you have to have special pans for them. These are all smooth top ranges. I'm not sure that they are in any way accessible. I work for a large retail company known as Sears, and we have these, and I have examined them in our showroom area. I haven't figured out yet how they're going to be accessible for anyone who is sightless.
Actually, I'm afraid to buy a new stove. Ours works. We bought it in 91, and it works fine, and I'm afraid to even think about buying a new stove.
Well, if something goes wrong with yours and you think you need to get one, Susan, they do make it ones that are accessible, but you just have to look harder. I went to ABC Warehouse and got mine, and it's kind of funny. The very first store I walked up to is the one I ended up getting, but it's all accessible. The only thing that's not accessible on is the clock, but they're not accessible on anything like that.
I did recently buy a broiler oven that has a... uses click detents for the time and temperature, and it has worked out very well. My big issue is getting used to the fact that I don't have to preheat anymore. It's a KitchenAid. I bought it at Bed Bath & Beyond. It was about $125. There are detents for the time and temperature. It goes up to 30 minutes for time and 400 and broil for temperature. And the big trick is that there's a bake and a warm option, and you have to have that particular switch switched in the proper area, and there's no such thing as off. So it took a little time getting used to it, but now we're using it for our cooking, our baking, and our broiling, and we're really enjoying it.
And I can't live without the crock pot.
Serotech, if you haven't seen it, of course, we have all the crock pot recipes. Can't go wrong there. I mean, you got to love a crock pot. You got that little room of latitude. So if you're busy, you know, as long as you know what you're doing, it's pretty hard to mess up a meal unless you really fall asleep or something. Any of you use any kind of bread making machines?
Yes, I've used the Zojirushi, which I like very much. I don't know what it is, and I don't know if it's my climate, but I always manage to get flat dough rocks, baked dough rocks. But I think that has to do with me and not the machine. I have had some good results, and when it works well. And that does take a little memorization as to the course, whether you want it C-O-U-R-S-E, whether you want rye, white, or whatever, and you just set your temperature settings. And there are a couple of... there were some Braille cookbooks out, or bread-making books out there. I know NBP had one. When you get a good homemade loaf of bread, it's great.
I would ask how people deal with washing machines, the new programmable washers that have all the sophistication to them. Anybody got any comments?
Well, I went cheap and got one with the old-fashioned dials and then just put some markings on the high, medium, or whatever, the long, medium, and short cycles. But, yeah, that's a good question. What if you're somewhere where you don't have a choice or in an apartment complex where you have to use the ones that are available to you? And I assume some of the new ones that you're selling there at Sears probably aren't very accessible.
Unfortunately, I've been working on that, but I haven't been able to get in touch with the right people yet.
We have an old Amana set that we bought in 1993, and we just took Dymo tape and put little Braille levels on, little Braille notations on it, PP for permanent press, and delicate D. Or if they're not heat sensitive, you can feel the membranes, and you can get the buttons labeled. They're great.
Demo the color identifier, so I guess I could let you hear it here. This is the one I have. I thought maybe the cobalt was better and someone else says not, but it might be a personal preference and there might be a whole art to using it. But this is the one I have. This is the Colorino. It's a combination color and light identifier. There's basically a little circular opening at the top with a little, looks like a light, but it's the actual sensor that reads. And then on the very top, there's a speaker. On the right side, there's two jacks. One is an earphone jack, and one is apparently you can connect some kind of attachment to it and actually upgrade the firmware. And there's just two buttons on the top, just two little round buttons. So the top one, of course, tells you the color, and I was pointing it at what I'm talking into, which is this grill that sits in front of the microphone to try to prevent my peas from popping and all that good stuff. So I'll turn around and point it at my sweater, and sometimes it's really not quite on the mark. It fluctuates, so sometimes you might want to read it a couple times, and hopefully you can still hear it when I push the button.
Dark gray.
There it says it's dark gray. But if I push it again or take it away and push it back, it might say something else.
Gray, brown.
There it says gray, brown. So now you're wondering, well, what is it? Is it gray? Is it brown? Some kind of shade in between?
Dark brown.
There it says dark brown. So, yeah, you're left guessing. And it seems like earlier when I did it, it said beige, which usually means white, I've learned with this thing.
Beige.
There you go, beige. So if you heard that, I got four different colors. So now I got to guess what my sweater is based on that. And, of course, the pants.
Dark brown. brown.
Well, there it says dark brown before it said black. So I don't know. I mean, there's a whole art to it, and there's things you can do. It sometimes has to do with what's in the background and the surface, or sometimes if you point it at nothing and then bring it back. Sometimes it's right on the money, and other times I've, you know, it's one of those things you take it to people and sighted folks alike. They are very amused with it and like to play with it. Definitely the life of the party, but, and then also the bottom button then is a light probe. Ah, I'm living in the dark here. I have no lights on. So, of course, you can use that to detect if you had a visitor or forgot to turn off a light, or you can point at the window if it's a sunny day and tell if you got your blinds open or not, or sometimes that a storm is approaching. And, you know, by the different tones. And I've also found a way for it to, if you hold it in, it actually makes these weird clicks that lets you know that lightning is approaching. So I have maybe an abnormal fear of lightning because when I was a child, we lived in the country. We had this wooden barn behind us, and I saw it get hit. I heard it, the lightning hit it and catch on fire, and listened to it and smelt it burn to the ground. And I remember walking out there and seeing nothing and thinking, wow, what if I was standing in that thing? You hear it make this, it's a weird clicking sound. It's a very strange sound. It almost scares you. You almost think, wow, is that messing up my device? But, so you hear that, and then based on the time between that and the thunder, it gives you a good idea of how close the storm actually is to you. Because a mile will take about 4.8 seconds, but if you hear it, and a second later or less hear the thunder, you know it's within just a couple hundred yards, almost right overhead. So if you're outside, you better be getting yourself indoors. So that's kind of neat. And also, I use it like for electronic devices. I can point, like, I know your cable modem. Tomner works for a cable company, so you have to ask the callers how many lights. All your lights flashing, you got all five or six lights, maybe the first three, but none of the other three or whatever. But at least with this, I can actually tell you that information now where I couldn't before. I can say, yeah, three are constantly flashing and one's kind of blinking. It's going up and down in frequency, but the other two are dead or so forth. So that's helpful, you know, for electronic devices on or off or not. And I can use it like pointed at my sound recorder, which is, it's quasi-accessible, but I can point at it and tell that it is advancing because it sees the clock and it makes a sound that changes every second, so I know it is recording. So there's a lot of uses with a little innovation beyond just detecting color and light. Colorino, bought it in 2006. At that time, it was $149. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you next week. And of course, as always, get the show notes at Cerotalk, Cerotalk.com. So until next week, let's stay connected.